Engaging with Indigenous Australia is often said to be the first step to mending some of the rifts between the two cultures, but where do you start if you've never done it before? What, for example, is the right way to address an Indigenous Australian? What is a welcome to country? And how do you separate myth from fact when it comes to assumptions people have about Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people? Academic and writer Larissa Berendt has taken it onto herself to answer these and more questions. Her book, Indigenous Australia for Dummies, is the result, and she joins us in the studio now. Larissa, welcome to Summer Breakfast.
Thank you so much for having me here.
Absolute pleasure. Now, why do we need this book? I think we do, but why do we need it?
Why did I write it?
Yes.
Well, I think there are a lot of Australians who are genuinely interested to know more about Indigenous Australia, don't know who to ask, don't want to ask a question that offends, don't want to be seen as asking a stupid question, and want to go somewhere where perhaps the tone is light and conversational. They don't want to, I guess, I think sometimes people are a little bit afraid of going into what seem like very intractable problems. And I think the idea that you could explore some of these issues with a more upbeat, positive, conversational tone, I thought might bring more people in to want to try and have that conversation.
I agree with you. What it does is try to thwart a lot of myths that have grown up. That we've grown up with. And what I found extraordinary is having witnessed or lived through a mainstream Australian education, how much material I have wrong and how much material I didn't know. And I looked for a metaphor for the way history is written often by the victors. In this instance, I found a metaphor when I was doing a series a few years ago, and came across a story that in 1853, the White brothers, this is in southwestern Victoria, in reprisal for the loss of a few cattle, shot dead 51 Aboriginal men, women and children. No charges were ever laid. The main street of the nearby town is White Street, and one of the brothers who perpetuated the massacre ended up being the Premier of Tasmania. Now, history is written by the victors, isn't it?
It is, and of course history is a whole range of competing narratives. So
yes.
I think part of what you hope to do with a book like this is start to introduce people to the fact that exactly as you said, and I had the same education as well, and I often thought this doesn't sound like it's consistent with my own family history, that you want to let people know that there is a counter-narrative in a way that might actually, through a book like this, I would hope, induce them to want to learn more. I mean, this book isn't a definitive, history, but it is, I would hope, a way of getting people who might want to see what an alternative view was or might want to know a little bit more, not just about things in the past, as you say, where we've, there's been such a tussle about what's the story that you tell, what's the overarching story you tell. But I think even today, I think a lot of people think, well, there's a lot of issues facing Indigenous Australians. We need to do more, but we do so much and nothing works. We throw lots of money at it and nothing happens. I think it's also important to try to do in the book is to say that actually there is a lot happening and you can look at a lot of really good examples. And I think the important thing about that is that it makes people feel a bit more relaxed that actually you can put energy into this conversation and there be some really positive results from it.
Yeah, I agree. Well, let's look at some landmark moments in this history. The first would have to be the arrival of Governor Phillip and the concept of terra nullius, which we've lived with right and through until the 1990s.
Well, that's right. I think that's a...
The land was free.
Because they saw people there, but they just assumed that there was no system of laws, and their claim was really not so much against the Aboriginal people, but against other colonial powers to say this is really ours. And what's interesting is, of course, they do all of that, the planting of the flag, all that symbolism is actually really important to say this is actually, these are the physical steps that we're taking to show that we have some kind of ownership over that land. And I think what was really interesting for me in researching the book, and I have to confess that I've learnt so much writing this, but I thought I knew a lot to start out on this adventure, but I certainly learned a lot along the way, was some of the really interesting examples of the way Aboriginal people tried to navigate that. You have, of course, people like Bennelong, who tried to be a mediator between two communities and found that very difficult. You have his wife, Barangaroo, who had very strong views about the relationship that we should have had with the people who were then starting to colonise. She used to walk into what was then Government House completely naked to kind of assert her Aboriginal right to the land. She gave birth to her child at Government House because she thought, with under Aboriginal custom at the time, that that would give her child some ownership over that land, because that's how it works. In your birthing place is an important part of your own cultural history. And so just to dig a little bit deeper into these names that we kind of hear but don't really know much about starts to actually give you a really great way to look at some of the more complex dynamics that occur as you try to negotiate a space that people are colonising or, you know, trying to retain.
Yeah. Let's look then, say, let's fast forward to the referendum of 1967. Now, I'd always thought that that gave Aboriginal people the right to vote.
That is one of the great myths, either that it gave people the right, Aboriginal people the right to vote, or it was the moment at which they became citizens.
Yeah.
And in fact, it didn't do either of those things. Aboriginal people in most places around Australia could vote by that time, except in Queensland. So it did actually allow for some changes there, but it didn't actually give people the right to vote. And what it did do was it allowed Aboriginal people to be included in the census, which became more than just a number counting exercise. People like Faith Bandler say that they thought if Aboriginal people were included in the census like that, it would be kind of a nation building thing where we started to see ourselves as one. And the other very important change that it made was it gave the federal government the power to make laws for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people. And, you know, that was where a fundamental shift happened, because you then had, I guess, a shared jurisdiction between the federal government and states and, in, you know, territories when they were able to make their own laws over who was going to have control of Aboriginal people. And in actual fact, although the assumption was if you, at the time, if you look at the referendum, that if the federal government had the power to make laws, that they would act much more beneficially towards Aboriginal people than the states had. One of the unintended consequences of that was the shared responsibility around Aboriginal people has meant a kind of cost shifting, where both levels of government tend to blame the other for failure in policy, and both try to push the burden of the cost of funding housing or education onto the other. So it's actually been an unintended consequence. But I love the moment of the referendum for what it symbolises, because we often talk about, you know, the challenges around racist perceptions and things like that. But the referendum was a moment where over 90% of Australians across huge sort of class, philosophical, political divide, religious divide, came together and said the fate of our country is tied to the fate of Aboriginal people. Over 90% of people said this is an issue for us.
Now, Larissa, could we get you back sometime to talk about this some more?
I could talk about it for a very long time.
Honestly, there is so much here to mine, but I'm going to end this now because we've got to go. Larissa, thank you for coming in, and we will talk about this again, I think, next week. This has been RN Summer Breakfast. This is the end of the week. Have a wonderful weekend. I look forward to your company again next week. It's coming up to 9 o'clock. You've been with John Doyle. Bye for now.